Please thank all the staff in the Lake House nursing home who made it in treacherous conditions. That's coming in from Jennifer. The back road between Drumkeen and the back road to Rann is very dangerous. It's impassable. People should avoid it. And on it goes. Some of these are from earlier in the morning, and I don't want to read them out in case it puts people off journeys. Coming through the gap crease to Termon yesterday morning at 8:15, the temperature was -3. It's not a fantastic road either, by the way. I was travelling at 65 kilometres per hour. The roads were white with just tracks in the middle. A white car behind me flashed the whole duration of my trip. On straight stretches, I gave this car ample opportunity to pass. They didn't, but continued to sit on my bumper flashing. Now, I'm all for pulling in and letting people pass, but 65 kilometres an hour on a frozen stretch of road, need to be mindful that there are anxious drivers, and flashing doesn't really help with the anxiety. And to me, driving any faster would have been reckless. If you're late for work, leave earlier, but I value my safety and that of my colleagues and passengers. Rant over. Yeah, this, I just wonder sometimes if people engaged in such activity realise that they're actually upsetting another human, you know, with their impatience, that they're actually ruining someone's day. Do people think about that, to think of the consequences of their actions? I wonder. I just checked the register and I can only vote on the presidential elections. I've voted all my life. It's worrying that this is happening. Please, everyone, check the register. Greg, schools are off and I don't see one child playing in the snow in our area. Things have changed so much. When we were kids, we played out all day in the snow. Too pampered now, or too glued to their iPhones. Yeah, indeed. Okay, have you observed that? I've seen on social media loads of images of young ones out enjoying the snow, but maybe we are changing and we're too protective. Greg, can you please highlight a situation at Milford where women and children are walking on the side of the road to get their messages in Milford? This is a very busy road and these people have to walk on about 1 foot of grass and have to come off that grass with signs, etc. All is required to give them somewhere to walk is a 6-inch pipe and a bit of gravel. Yeah, indeed. Okay, I think I know to what you're talking to there. All right, thanks very much for that. Right, now, we're joined by John O'Connell, who's a voluntary director of Steer Housing Association, STEER. Good morning to you, John.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's great to have you on the programme. Okay, so Steer, it is an approved housing body. Is it national? Is it local? What kind of properties and what have you is it involved in? And
well, it's Steer has been going for almost 20 years, and we have properties in about 9 counties, mostly in the northern half of the country. And we have quite a number here in Donegal, in Letterkenny, Convoy, Buncrana, Ballyshannon, for example. It's a mixture of properties, owned or properties, apartment blocks, some duplex accommodation as well. So it's been going for some time.
And you service the local authority housing lists. What is the relationship there? How does that work?
Well, how it works is that if one of our properties becomes vacant, we would be in touch with the local authority in that particular county, and they would give us a name of somebody who's due to get housing, and we'll take them on, very happy to take them on. We have very few empty properties, and they're empty for less than few weeks.
So based out of Letterkenny, and you currently manage 216 properties. Like, does Steer own these properties?
No, in most cases, because we're going so long, we have long-term lets or long-term contracts with landlords over the years. Now, that model is changing slightly, which is the purpose for why we're looking for new directors. But we have quite a long sort of tenured contracts over the years, and we have some long-tenured people living there as well.
So presumably you give the landlords the assurance that they have a regular income and that you look after and run the property and ensure that it's not a depreciating asset for them, I presume.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, maintenance would be one of the biggest issues we have. We would have maintenance schedules that are both contractual but also best practice, because we work with the housing regulator. And, you know, we need to be able to demonstrate that we're good custodians of the money that we get from the council and that we provide good quality property as
Now, the function of this conversation, too, is to address you know, changing and rigorous regulatory environment for all housing associations. So you're going to strengthen the board membership, and we'll get to that in a moment. But in terms of how STEER operates and how it might operate into the future, what role do you see STEER having? Is it going to start purchasing houses, or where do you see STEER going, particularly with so much pressure on housing in this country at the moment?
Well, I think first of all, we need to ensure that what we have, we keep and we manage it well. And, you know, the building codes are changing all the time. So, for example, we've had to go in and upgrade fire alarm systems, whatever, you know, to keep up to date. So that's really important. But, you know, as we look down as the leases start to expire, we have an ambition to purchase or build properties in the future. Now, that's quite an undertaking. So we need to strengthen our board in order to provide that sort of technical knowledge to do that.
Yeah, so you're looking for people with backgrounds and skills, not limited to, but including governance, finance, property and housing management, risk appraisal, risk management. And these would be volunteers. And I suppose the question is like, what's in it for them?
Well, I think it's like any charitable venture, you know, we like to give back to the community. I think we can all sit on the fence and complain about housing, but let's try and do something about it. We are where we are now through various government policies over the years that has relied very much on the private sector for general housing needs, but also on the charitable sector to provide specific needs for vulnerable families and individuals who also need housing. So I think, you know, as a community, it's the right thing to do. And, you know, people have plenty of skills. They may have, like myself, retired recently and are not prepared just to sit back and put up my feet up and put on the slippers. We like to sort of keep involved and give something back to the community.
Do STEER intend growing their portfolio? Like, how would you go about acquiring new properties? I don't need a specific example, but I mean, obviously, there is a limit on properties that are out there and what have you, and that's really the crux of the housing crisis. So at the moment, you manage 216 properties across nine counties. How does that portfolio grow?
Well, how it grows is by looking at opportunities that present themselves. Particularly, we'd like to look at in the Donegal area because, you know, as a legacy, we're probably very widely spread throughout the counties, but we have a specific ambition to look at areas around Donegal, talk to builders, because builders sometimes are in a challenging position that they want to build houses, but the banks won't give them finance. So, you know, somebody like ourselves, you know, we have the ability to source finance, but we need to be able to do that in partnership with either a builder, a developer, landowner, whatever. So I think that's really what we'd like to do, to add to the stock of social housing that's badly needed.
Yeah, and it's very important work that STEER is doing, but is it not doing the work that a properly functioning local authority should be doing? Is this not another layer that really, in an ideal world, shouldn't be there or shouldn't need to be there?
Well, yes, you're correct, Greg. I think in an ideal world, the local authority would have done this in the past. But I think throughout successive governments, it's been felt that, you know, the private market would come in. Now, it has come in, and we can see the effects of that now. But what kind of fell between the cracks would be what I would call social housing for vulnerable individuals or families. And charities have come in, and there's 450 approved housing bodies in Ireland. There may be 20 or 30 in Donegal alone, and they're all doing fabulous work. It could be St. Vincent de Paul. It could be other areas for independent living. So there are various organisations that have a particular interest and passion, which is really good. And in some cases, you know, in all cases, the council is quite happy because they're allowing people who know that area very well to get on with the job.
Yeah, and maybe aren't as quite as constrained as a local authority can often be with all the red tape and regulations and hoops and what
Precisely.
Have you. Okay, John, listen, it's a fascinating insight into the work of, you know, the voluntary housing association sector. You're with STEER, of course, director of STEER. You're looking to strengthen the membership of the board. People could have skills in governance, finance, property and housing management, risk appraisal, and risk management, or anything they believe that they might be able to bring to it. I don't think it's a massive time commitment as such, but I suppose it's as much as you wish to put in. If people want more information and just say, you know, well, this might pique my interest, where can they get more information, or who can they speak to, John?
If the email hr@steeringhousing.com, we're advertising on all the local papers as well as with yourselves. So that's HR, all lowercase, HR@steerhousing.com.
Okay, so HR@steerhousing, that's STEERHOUSING.com. If anyone has any doubt about that, they can contact us and we'll be more than happy to pass on that information to them. John, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Greg.
It's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much indeed, John. That's John O'Connell there. It's very positive that Lyme's disease is getting the platform it is on Coronation Street. There's a young character in it that's been showing symptoms here and there. They were taken to hospital last night, and this is how things unfolded in terms of the diagnoses.
It was when you told me that his symptoms started after he'd been camping.
What's Lyme disease?
It's caused by a tick, usually found in grasslands, and a percentage of the ticks carry the disease.
We did an MRI and blood tests and couldn't find anything abnormal, but when Dr. Gaddis suggested Lyme, we examined his scalp and found a large circular rash that looks like a bullseye.
Which sometimes can be found after a tick bite.
But it can't be a tick bite. I would have seen it. I brushed his hair just last week when he was poorly.
They drop off after 2 to 3 days, but by that time, the infection has already entered the system. And the symptoms look like flu or like growing pains in children. So it's very easy to misdiagnose.
But if missed, it can spread to the central nervous system, which I suspect is what's happened to Joseph.
So if it is Lyme disease, I mean, what happens next?
We're going to do a blood test called an ELISA, and we should get the results pretty quickly. But because of his symptoms and the rash, I suspect it's going to be positive. So we're going to start the relevant treatment straight away.
And what does that involve?
Will he be able to walk again?
We're going to give him intravenous antibiotics. And yes, usually the damage is totally reversible.
Usually?
Nothing's 100%, but I have cause to be very hopeful.
And on it goes. Now, we've discussed Lyme's disease on this programme for years now. And what my experience of it is that, firstly, people are not getting diagnosed. They're going to the GPs or whatever. And through perhaps a lack of information, because they are general practitioners, they're told it's everything under the sun bar what it is. And even in the Dáil, it's been somewhat dismissed. Now, a lot of people have to go to England at great expense or go and get blood tests in Germany. And then what do they do with the blood tests or the diagnosis if it's confirmed? Unless it's changed, there's one consultant effectively in Dr. Lambert, who's been a regular guest on this programme as well, who will engage and prescribe the antibiotics. Also, the information as it relates to the rash, it's not always present. Does it last that long? I don't know. But also this experience, and maybe it's the way it is in Britain, but this experience of, oh, well, it could be that. There's a blood test. That's what it is. We're starting you on antibiotics. You're going to fully recover. Most people do. Again, not the experience, especially, I think, with later diagnoses. But anyway, that's my take on it from what I've been dealing with it on this programme. Peter Patton joins me on the programme now. Peter, who has or had, I don't know how you phrase it, Peter, Lyme's disease. So I suppose on the first instance, it's good that it's being talked about. But my word, if anyone in Ireland thinks that this is how things are going to work for them, they could be in for a shock.
Good morning, Greg. Exactly, you're correct there, because I was to hell and back when I had it, and there was no help out there. And I got all the tests of the day done, both in Letterkenny and Sligo Hospital, and I was tested twice for Lyme's disease, including a lumbar puncture. And nothing. It all came back negative. While I had all the symptoms of Lyme's, there was nothing shown in this country here. And it's only then we realised through other people then that Ireland was just 70% accurate in diagnosing Lyme's. Now, while the powers that be would argue differently that it is accurate, I know from experience that I spent 4 years of real tough life.
How long did it take before you actually received a blood test for Lyme's disease?
I took on well on September 2015, and by October 16, we had found out about Armin Labs in Germany. Mm-hmm. And it was a simple blood test that it was posted by DHL on the Monday or the Tuesday, and by the following week, the bloods were back. And the bloods were showing 2,000 and 3,000 points over of where they should have been at.
So what did you do with those results from Armin Labs then? Where did you take them?
We took them up to Letterkenny Hospital. It was plain and black and white what I had. And that was 2016, up to a consultant.
But and they wouldn't accept... Day, would they? Sorry, Peter, I just, because I know this is your lived experience, but I want to make sure that and the listeners follow this journey with you. So you have results from Germany, Armin Labs, with the pointers so high that it's clear that you've got bacteria in your blood, that this should indicate Lyme disease. Were they accepted as blood results to start a treatment program for you, or were they ignored in your view?
They were totally ignored because I never heard from the hospital after that. When I left the results up, I never heard from the hospital after it. And it was in plain black and white. And it wasn't just borderline over. It was 3,000 points over of where the bloods should have been at.
So that's 2016, is it?
That was 2016.
So tell us about your symptoms at this point and what you were doing next.
The fatigue. Well, it started off with the rash and between my shoulder blades, and then about a week later, then I just thought it was a flu, like a bad flu, and then the aches and pains started in the joints, and the fingers were like needles and pins, and the headache, and while you couldn't keep your eyes open with fatigue, you couldn't go to sleep either. Whatever way it affected the brain, it was all. I know a lot more about it, but it's all down to inflammation of the brain and the joints that caused all these aches and pains and nerve pain.
So you effectively, and again, unfortunately, this has been the experience of so many people I've spoken to. You were told, were you, that this was in your head, that there's something wrong with your brain, that you're not thinking straight?
No. The recommended psychiatric assessment that I was taken up a bed in the hospital that somebody really needed. And I was confined to the house at that stage. I couldn't, if I go down on the sofa, somebody had to pull me up. I just couldn't get up off the sofa and be helped out of the bed.
The pain. I just want to know then, when did you hear about Dr. Lambert down in Dublin? Because I don't know what it's like now, but not incredibly popular. Because, you know, going against the grain, accepting the results from Germany and what have you, probably a little bit of distrust of our testing system in this country. So at what time did you engage with Lambert? And I'm sure he took one look at you and knew it was Lyme's. Am I wrong?
Oh, absolutely, because Dr. Lambert really wasn't interested in seeing you unless you had the results of your bloods done in Germany. He went with them. He didn't go with any test that was done in Ireland. He went with the test that's done in Germany. And October 16, I got the diagnosis, and I started the treatment then with Dr. Lambert then on October 16 for 2 solid years of antibiotics. And for the first 6 months, it was going nowhere. But then gradually the headaches started to ease and the nerve pain started settling, and I know that I turned the corner then at that stage. But it took a further 2 years after that before I could say I'm 85 to 90% better. I don't know if you'll ever get over the 100%.
Has it affected any of your other organs, you know, your heart, your kidney? Do your bloods return normal at this point, or are you still getting strange peaks and troughs?
The brain fog would be the biggest issue. Hutz always seems to be there to a certain extent, you know. But everything else has settled down pretty well. You do be tired there. If you put on a long day, you definitely do feel it for a day or two after, but you keep on going, Greg, you know.
Yeah, and so, as I say, I don't want to be overly negative. People are hearing about Lyme's disease for the first time, but as I say, I don't recognise how it's being presented in Britain. You could hear in the conversation that we played out a little earlier on, they're trying to go through all the hit lists of stuff. Do you know what I mean? But that's just not what it's like here.
That's not what it's like here. We had a Lyme's group set up here in Donegal, and people got to know us, and mothers ringing about their children that had presented with a rash to their GP, because at that stage there was a bit out there about Lyme's disease and the harm it can do. And there was a certain woman, she came back to me, and the GP prescribed cream for the rash. And when you see the rash, it's in the World Health Organization that they recommend at least 6 weeks of antibiotics. And there was other cases where children was putting antibiotics just for 2 weeks. That's it, you're grand now. But you're far from grand. If you have the rash shown there, there's a very high probability that has gone into your bloodstream and you're heading down a bad road. Great.
Would it be familiar for the bullseye rash to stay? Now, it's not always present, but it usual that it sticks around for as long as they're making out in this programme that it does? Because that wouldn't have been my understanding either.
No, as far as my rash stood, hung about for about 2 or 3 days.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. Yeah, I'm just wondering now if people don't see a rash, they might go, it's not that. You know, I think you have to be careful with this type of programming.
Yes. We've campaigned in Dublin to try to get more awareness of it, but we're just flogging a dead horse.
Sure, there was a motion passed in the council years ago at this stage to have signs erected in certain parts of Donegal where it's believed that these infectious ticks are likely to be, so that parents are aware that they can check their kids, pull any ticks out that might be there, get antibiotics early on if need be. I don't think those signs ever went up, Peter. I don't know why not, but it was a motion that was passed. Did they go up?
As far as I know, they didn't go up, because I was out in Glenveagh and I seen no signs there. And we weren't out looking to put up signs to scare tourism away or nothing like that. This is a harmful tick. If it's on you in the morning, check yourself in the evening, pull the tick out, that's it. But if a tick gets staying on you for a number of hours or a couple of days and this rash appears, well then you're in serious trouble. But we were never out to scare away tourism. We were out to make people aware, but it never happened. It all fell on deaf ears.
All right. Well, listen, at the very least, we've got an opportunity to talk about it again today, because even when I posted about this yesterday, there was an individual who was being told that my impression I got from her comment that she believes it is Lyme's, but she was being sent for tests for other stuff as well. You know, so I think every day there's people going through what you went through in 2015, 2016, Peter, banging the head off a brick wall. It's everything but Lyme's, it seems. That's so often the attitude.
It mimics 200 other diseases, Lyme's. So it's very hard, unless you have a very accurate diagnosis, and Arm and Lambs is worldwide accredited for testing for Lyme's. But yet, there's consultants here that don't want to know about it. If you have it black and white in front of you from Arm and Labs, and it's disappointing. We only set out to make ourselves better again. Not to, I don't know what word you could find, not to abuse the system or not.
No, but the sooner the antibiotics are applied, the better the chance of reversing any organ damage or whatever it might be. One other thing, obviously we know this is not the lived experience in Ireland. Have you had any contact with anyone in Britain, Peter? Because they, as I say, you can sort of tell the way they're scripted, that they go through the hit list of stuff with these support groups. In Britain, is this seen as an accurate representation and useful in the show? Do you know, Peter? Maybe you don't know. We know it's not in Ireland, but is it accurate in Britain?
Well, we were told way back that Britain's pretty close to Ireland on diagnosing Lyme's, and that's why we were sent to Ireland, that they were better than Britain. I'm not saying Britain's worse than Ireland, maybe they're better, but certainly we were recommended to go to Ireland Labs anyway, Greg.
Brilliant, Peter. Listen, thanks for your time. I'm glad that you're 95% or 90% better. I wish it were 100%, but look, at you got there in the end, and I'm sure you're like many others that have dealt with Dr. Lambert. You'd hold him up in very high regard for getting you back to where you're at.
Only for Dr. Lambert and my good wife. I'll be in a wheelchair.
She deserves a mention too, Peter. What's her name?
Michelle
Patton. Patton. What an angel. Okay, fair play to you.
Thank you, Greg.
Bye-bye, Peter.
Thank you.
It's important. You helped us in coming on. Caller says, are you actually surprised that the health service in Ireland is inferior to that of UK? You see, well, according to Peter there, it might not even be a fair representation of how the disease is identified and diagnosed over there. Now, the Shandon Hotel and Spa are hosting empowerment workshops with Miranda Rosenberger. The workshops are taking place at the Shandon Hotel and Spa. Miranda joins us on the program now. Good morning to you. How are you getting on?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. It's good to see you again. Right. Okay. So, empowerment workshops. What is empowerment? How are we empowered?
I will tell you how you're empowered. I teach very practical steps to help you help yourself, because I can't fix you. You can't come to a 2-hour workshop and then walk away going, I'm fixed. That's not my job. My job is to give you all the tools so that you are empowered to help yourself.
When we talk about self-image, which is the focus on Sunday, the 28th of January, it's not necessarily, is it about us beautifying ourselves? Is it accepting us for who we are? Or maybe it's a combination of both. I don't know. You tell me, Miranda, you're the expert.
It's a little bit more complex than that, sir. So your self-image is your overall perception of yourself, your overall picture. And that includes not just how you look, but it's an assessment of your skills, talents, abilities, your self-esteem, your self-confidence, all of those things. And sometimes when we look at the picture we have of ourselves, we're unhappy. There'll be components that we want to change. And I teach the steps to change those things. So if you feel as if your self-confidence is lagging, there are very practical steps that you can take in order to improve that.
Because sometimes, I presume I'm pretty normal, but you know, sometimes you look at yourself in the mirror, right? And you go, oh my God. And nothing has changed. And the next day you might look at the mirror and you go, man, you know what? Not so bad. You know, that's your mind playing tricks on you, isn't it?
It's subjective. It's so subjective. It's depending on how you're feeling that day, what values that you hold you're prioritizing that day. It has to do with how healthy you're feeling at any given moment. Like, we are whole people. We can't say, oh, I'm only going to invest in fixing my self-confidence today and not think about all the other things that are going on in your body at the same time. We're whole people. We have to address our whole selves.
So you want people to walk out of the event on the 28th of January, you know, with the shoulders back a bit more, metaphorically speaking. You know, are you hoping to have that type of an impact and tool people up to be able to work on themselves?
My goal is for people to walk out of that workshop going, right, I can take control of how I feel about myself and how I engage with the world. Mm-hmm. I will have a deeper understanding of who I am, why I do the things I do, and why I think about myself the way that I think about myself. Because I tell you what, there is nothing worse in the world than when somebody is lacking in self-confidence or self-esteem, and someone says, well, just be confident. Or if you're depressed, they go, just snap out of it. There's nothing worse. Give someone the tools in order to do that. And that's what this is.
Because life can grind you down, can't it? You know, even with the best spirit in the world, you know, if you have things going your way or certain people in your life or whatever it might be, you know what life throws up at us, it can grind you down. That you know, maybe you do need to build yourself back up again.
You do. And there's, even if you don't feel ground down, even if you are just feeling a little bit insecure or just feeling a little bit out of sorts, everybody can benefit from learning how to augment their self-image, because then you feel so much better in your own skin when you do. And we all need that.
Yeah. On Sunday, the 25th of January, you focus on self-confidence. Is there, like, you know, if these were two circles, is there a bit of an overlap in there? But this is obviously a separate event. But I mean, they're not two necessarily completely standalone issues or topics.
Well, you are correct. So when we talk about our self-image, it's our overall picture of ourselves. And when I teach self-image that I'm teaching in January, it's more about how do we augment our overall picture. Self-confidence, I get a bee in my bonnet. I've said before, nothing burns my biscuits more than when people confuse what self-confidence is with self-esteem. And you can't fix what you don't know. Like if you don't understand cars, you can't fix it. If you don't know what self-confidence is, you can't fix it. And the difference is this. Your self-esteem is how you value yourself. Are you lovable? Are you worthy? Are you good enough? That's subjective. You can feel differently every day. But your self-confidence, that is your faith, or belief in your skills, abilities, or talents. That's fact-based. Can I brush my teeth? Yes. Well, then I have confidence in my, I have faith or belief in my ability to brush my teeth. And the question is, if you're feeling a lack of confidence in any domain of your life or overall a lack of confidence, how can you build that up? And again, there's very practical, non-fluffy steps to that. Because I really, really also hate when people do that. You should just feel better. Oh, you just deserve to be loved. Maybe you don't. You could be a horrible person. I don't know. But what I can do is teach you how to build up your self-confidence.
Yeah, and I think too in the day in itself is you seem to be designing it to whereby it's a day for someone to sort of maybe switch out a little bit. You know, it's a bit of a day for themselves. On arrival, the reception and that afternoon tea and what have you. You want it to be a full experience.
It is because, you know, we've talked before about in my former life, I worked with vulnerable populations. Mm-hmm. I worked with survivors of domestic violence. I worked with people who were in crisis, people recovering from addiction. And those settings are quite stark. Whereas I wanted an event where you could invest in your mental, emotional, and physical self-care. Mm-hmm. So you come, you feed your body, you feed your mind, and you improve how you feel about yourself.
All right. Now there's a cost to it, €55 per person per workshop. There's morning refreshments, afternoon tea. There are options there as well if you want to throw in a thermal suite, 1.5 hours in the thermal suite, or even indeed if you wanted to go all out and stay overnight in the Shandon, which is it's a lovely hotel, actually, a beautiful setting as well. So people can invest in themselves as much as they see fit. How do people get more information, Miranda?
They can go to the Shandon's website. Everything's listed there or any of my socials. Miranda Rosenberg on Google will take you to any of my socials or Homestead Donegal, because that's my social media page.
Lovely stuff. And what's the format of it then? Are you all gonna? I presume it is open. Is it like men, women, whoever, or is it targeting women or what's the story?
Everything I teach is accessible to all. I don't care who you are. As long as you want to improve your picture of yourself, you come to one of my workshops. And you know what? I'm not just offering these. Come tomorrow. So on Friday, I will be listing a whole slew of online workshops as well.
All right, good stuff.
If you can't make it into the Shandon, I'll teach you online.
Right. Well, listen, best of luck with it. Thanks so much for your time. I really do appreciate it. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Good wishes to you. That's Miranda there. Go to the shandonhotelspa.com for more information there. 086 60 25,000. I have a bucket of comments. So many comments, actually. It's crazy. It's great. It's fantastic. I'm going to start getting to those. Oh, by the way, if you watched on YouTube, you might have had a disruption to your service because I think they didn't like me playing out a bit of Coronation Street. They might have thought I was trying to live stream. And it's amazing, the technology. You know, 2 minutes of Coronation Street and it's like, uh-oh, don't be at that crack. Well, anyway, listen, it was important to frame the conversation. So if you are watching on YouTube, my apologies. That's why, because you're probably wondering, what did he do? What did he say? It's just because we... there's little notes in songs and TV programs, what have you, that flag for copyright. So that's the reason. Right, we're joined on the programme now by Mary Daly, Tourism Development Officer with Donegal County Council. Good morning, Mary.
Hello, Greg. Good morning.
Great
How are
to
you?
See you. Good to have you on the show. Right, okay, there's an event coming up on the 24th of January at the Silver Tassie Hotel in Letterkenny. What's it about and who's it for?
Okay, Greg. Well, just to briefly tell you, I suppose Donegal County Council and Donegal Tourism are delighted to announce our first trade event of the year. And as you said, it takes place next Wednesday in the Silver Tassie, just outside Letterkenny. And it's Beyond the Stage is the title. And it's really for festival and events and organisers. It's a festival and events Insights Day, and you have the opportunity to come along and gain some valuable information to evaluate your festival and also speak to your peers, speak to other people in the county. Like, as you know, festival and events are a vital offering in the calendar of events of Donegal, so they're very important. So this is a unique opportunity for people to come along and to meet people on the day to find out vital information, but also just to, I suppose, network with other festival and events and pick up, you know, little nuggets of information as well and how other people do it. And
I think so too, sometimes, you know, there are quite a lot of streams of funding out there from different sources and what have you. And you know the ones that get it right and know the system because they're successful annually. And fair play to them. Don't get me wrong. I don't see that in any way as a negative. But for some, sort of going through that process might seem a little bit overwhelming, or maybe they're not even aware of funding sources that might suit their event or not. So there's information in that regard as well too during this event.
Absolutely. As you say, it can be difficult for people to navigate the funding streams that are available and to be aware of them, as you said. So, yes, this is a unique opportunity for people to come along. We have people like on the day, we have Colm Coffey from IFA. IFA is the Association of Irish Festival and Events. He'll come along and he'll going to give some valuable advice in relation to, I suppose, value for money marketing, which is very important for festivals, I suppose, to get, you know, as much as they can for every euro that they spend on marketing. Also finding new audiences and reimagining events, you know, because sometimes events have become maybe a little bit stagnant. You know, they're running in such a way for a number of years. So it's no harm to kind of maybe reinvent the wheel a little bit and, you know, look at other options or even to broaden, you know, your festival remit. So he'll be coming along. Also, we have, as you said, in terms of funding advice, we have someone from Fáilte Ireland coming along and they're going to give advice from the funders. So in relation to funding your festival from Fáilte Ireland, we'll also have our own Marion Callaghan from Donegal County Council. And Marion administers our festival fund every year. So Marion will go through the application process and the dates and, you know, just in relation to actually dealing with the application. Then we're going to have a panel discussion, and it's kind of the ups and downs of festival management, and it's from people on the ground. So we'll have the likes of Colm Coffey again from IFA will be involved in this. We have Thomas Costello from the Aranmore Festival. It'll be moderated by Daniel Brown, and of course Daniel is involved with C-Sessions, and I'm also going to sit on the panel, and I'm a director of Ballyshannon Folk and Traditional Music Festival. So I suppose we're going to try and go through the ups and downs of festival management. There'll also be kind of roundtable discussions, and then there'll be an opportunity for one-to-one clinics. So if you want to come along and you want to sit down with Fáilte Ireland and actually go through, you know, what funding is available to me as a festival organiser. So this, it's an opportune time. It's January. People now are looking ahead at the rest of the year, looking at their events, looking at their funding. You know, now is the time that people are booking artists. So, I mean, this is a good time, and it's really, and I think as well, the most important thing as well, Greg, it will give people an opportunity to network with their peers.
Yeah, that's a critical part of it, all right. It's a free event. Absolutely. It runs from 10:30 till 2 p.m, so it's not a huge time commitment in people's busy lives. Can you just roll up on the day? Do you need to pre-register, Mary, or what's the situation?
No, you need to pre-register, Greg, because obviously places are limited and quite a lot of the places, as you can imagine, are gone.
Yeah.
So I would advise people to please pre-register. You can do so on Eventbrite. Now you can search just Beyond the Stage is the title of the event. So you can search that on Eventbrite and then register, or you can go into Donegal Tourism's LinkedIn account and you'll see the link to the Eventbrite on that. So you can do that. There will it'll finish up with a light lunch. And again, that's an opportunity to chat with people around you, chat with people, you know, see what's working for some people and maybe how you could adapt that into your festival and stuff like that. So I would urge people, you know, festival and events, you know, the page on our website on Go Visit Donegal, Greg, is one of the most viewed pages on our website. So it really, like, people are looking at our festival and events. They do give people a reason to come to different areas. Also, I suppose it's really very important for the local economy, but also the local offering in terms of the calendar of events in your area as well, and something to go to.
And people looking to visit the area from inside the country, inside the county, try and start planning now.
I know as someone involved in a festival that, you know, people travel to your festival. They might come to your festival for 3 days, but I mean, they are spending time in the county and they're going to other areas as well. So these events are very important. And this is why we felt this year that we'd start off in January and we would offer this out to the trade and, you know, give people an opportunity to sit down with the people that really that they need to be speaking to.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You get the ears of those with the influence. All right. Mary Daly, Tourism Development Officer with Donegal County Council. Thank you very much for your time. That's Beyond the Stage. It's next Wednesday in the Silver Tassie Hotel, Letterkenny. Starts at 10:30. It's a free event, but you have to register. Go to Eventbrite or check out their LinkedIn page and so on and so forth. Right. All the children in our park are out playing in the snow in Buncrana. It's great to see. Lovely. Isn't that nice? It's you remember those things when you get older. You remember. Do you remember that year where we all got off school and it was snowing and we all went out and played? I lost my husband 5 years ago in an accident. My daughter started counselling before COVID and she's only getting back to it now. They're going to take it away again now when she needs it. She's only 13. She's really grieving. She was along with her dad when he died in the accident. I'm so sorry to hear that. The government don't realise how badly that these services are needed. They take away everything that we need. Well, listen, rest assured, the services aren't going to go. I don't think at this point, with the publicity, with the commitments from certain people, you've enough to go through grieving the loss of your husband, worrying about your child as well. There are organisations, you know, and maybe if someone's listening, and I'm not sure if I interviewed someone last year, and it was young people who chat to young people about bereavement. And I just can't remember who it is. I wonder, would you be interested in maybe some contact details on that? I'll chat to Caroline afterwards. And if you are interested, give us a call back, because I don't know if I have your number or not. But it was a network or something where young people who had been bereaved spoke to other young people. And we try our best and counsellors try their best. But I think maybe if young people can speak to each other as well. Again, I try and remember everything, but it's very difficult to do so. But those services, I really don't think they can go now at this point. So please don't worry about that for your daughter. And also, I'm going to try and rack my brains and others to see if we can come up with the details of bereavement initiative. I can't remember quite what it was. I'm so sorry to read that. I hadn't read that before. I read it first on air. Okay, listen, that's where we have to leave it on the show today. Thank you so much for all of your contributions and just listening or watching or whatever you do. It's great to have you on board. I really do appreciate it. We do appreciate it. It's not me. It's a full team here. Oh, it's a wee team, me, Caroline and Shannon. We're back tomorrow morning. It's Friday again. We have the Friday panel. We've got a Friday panel lined up, of course, to discuss the big issues of the day. If you want a topic suggested as well, please, you know, we do listen to you. You can WhatsApp or text in and we'll see if we can get around to it. We've got That's Entertainment too, when we ease our way into the weekend between 11 and 12, and we've Fionnuala and Michael back. And then there's plenty to keep you occupied between 10 and 11 as well. So please rejoin us for that. Good day.